It's just a pleasure to be here, and thank you all for taking your time to come hear me speak. You know, I had 12 years of religious training, 12 years. And at the end of that 12 years, as I was coming into the end of that 12 years, I came to learn about something called sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I got kind of better and better at that until I got to about 18 years old, and I said, you know, I'm not a bad guy. I'm doing like what all the other guys are doing, and I'm feeling pretty guilty all the time, and I'm going to blame this religious stuff on that. So at that point, I made the decision that I was going to turn from God, that God was not going to become a part of my life. And so I did. I literally turned my back on God. I went the other way, and I became an enemy of God in any kind of discussions that went on, as opposed to somebody who believed and promoted a relationship with God. With that, I took off and I went to college, and I went through college in 4 years. I wound up graduating with a degree in accounting, and through some set of circumstances, I wound up in the in a partnership in the emerging new technology market called software. And things really took off for me. Things went really, really well. Through that company, I met the love of my life, Kathy, who we've been married now for 41 years. We have four children, and we have three grandchildren, and I have two son-in-laws. That's a whole new role for me. I knew what it was like to be a son-in-law, and it didn't feel really good, okay? So I'm trying to make these guys feel a little bit better about themselves. but what happened is, we wound up at 28 years old. We wound up selling that company. I mean, I'm the son of my father was a trainman on the Jersey Central Railroad. I'm originally from New Jersey. He never made more than $30,000 in his whole life. And here I was, we sold this company and it was for millions. I was 28 years old. I didn't have any concept of what that meant. I remember at the time I was making $5,000 a month. And I thought, you know, I can live on this for the rest of my life. That was enough money. So I got addicted. I said, this is really cool. But I was living my own life and living my own way. But because the market was expanding so rapidly all around us, it was easy to set goals and achieve those goals. So things started moving along. When we got bought out, I said, hey, I love this corporate stuff. I'm dealing with some people in corporate who are really, really smart people. And I am a continuous learner. And I just, when these guys' lips were moving, I was learning. So I just wanted to be, I wanted to run bigger and bigger software companies is what I came to, working within these corporations. And I did that through most of the 80s. And as we got towards that Gulf War, that first Gulf War, if you remember those times, if you were around in business, there was a recession. Well, all of a sudden, Charlie was not hitting his goals. And Charlie was also, as he was going through corporate life, was living a life that was a little on the edge. The more money, the first-class plane tickets, the first-class hotels, it was a first-class life. I was gone most of the time from my family, and I was doing things that I just didn't want to do. I was drinking too much, and it was all work hard, play hard. Like, that's the only value that there ever is or they ever hear about in business. You hear it again today, okay? I have one now that they say, work hard, play hard, but be a nice person. That's the third one that kind of got thrown in. I'm like, oh, good. So I tried to be a nice person, but I worked hard, I play hard. Well, the play hard thing turned into doing some of the wrong things while under the influence, and not feeling good about it, feeling guilty about it, but knowing it was my fault now. And so how do you get past that? Well, you drink a little bit more the next time, and what do you wind up doing is a little bit of the same thing while under the influence, and it just gets worse and worse and worse to the point where I just didn't like me. Here I am at the top of the world as far as I was concerned, making more money. Everything was going well for me, and I just didn't like me. Sometimes I would lay in bed and say, you know, it would just be better if I was just gone. This is just too much for me. Well, it wasn't shortly after that that I was gone. They fired me. So I found myself now with having lost my identity in a lot of different areas of my life. I lost me in all of this. But the last thing that I lost is I lost my job. And when I lost my job, I really hit hard, because that was the one thing I had that I knew, that I was successful, I could lead people, I was a good manager, I was a good executive, and now I was nobody. I was unemployed. And it was a low time in my life. And it was about that time that I was at home with with Kathy, my wife, and we had dinner, and we drank a bottle of wine, and she had a glass, and I had the rest of the bottle, and then I sat down to watch the Braves game. Remember, it was the Braves, and it was towards the end of the season. And I looked up, and I said, you know, I said, my bedroom door is closed. Kathy's kind of huddled up in there. And I said, all my kids, they're in their bedrooms, and all their doors are closed. And I said, you know, you've done it. You've become your father. My father was an alcoholic. And when he drank, you couldn't trust him. You didn't know if he was going to love you more than anybody ever loved you in your life, or he was going to attack you verbally or emotionally. He never attacked me physically, but emotionally. And so the thing you learn as a kid is I learned to just kind of stay away. When he's drinking, just stay away. And when he's not drinking, I can kind of move in, because there was predictability. I said, I never wanted to be that. And so that was sort of the last straw. Now I became my father. And so now I've kind of couldn't even achieve that goal of not being him. And there I was. So I got a vision at that time for what my life would be like if I kept doing what I was doing. And my vision said, yeah, you're going to have another job and you're going to be okay. You're probably going to be pretty successful, but you're not going to have Kathy and you're not going to have these kids. And worst yet, the part of that vision was, and you're not going to care about it. I'm like, who are you? How did I get this way? And so I called somebody somebody who went to a recovery center, who was in business. And he said, well, why don't we get together for lunch? And we talked about it. He told me where it goes, and it wasn't a pretty place where this same lifestyle goes. He said, let's go to an AA meeting, in fact, on Johnson's Ferry Road. And it was at a bank back then. And I said, I don't think I have that kind of problem. He said, no. He says, it's not a people in a lot of dirty, dirty old raincoats and smelly people. You know, they're going to look like you. You know, it's all like East Cobb people, you know, that go to these things. So I went and I sat in the back, but I made sure I wore the best suit I had, because I was not one of those people. And I sat in the back and I sat with my head down. And what happened is, at the end of the meeting, they all stand up and they say the Lord's Prayer, and they hold hands, say the Lord's Prayer, and break. Now, I didn't know anything like about this. There were 70 people in the room. Well, they all stood up to do that. And this painter goes running to the front of the room in his paint outfit, and he says, everybody sit down. So I'm thinking, okay, we all sat down. And he points to me. He says, you in the back of the room. And I looked up. I'm like, yeah. He said, if you want to stop drinking one day at a time, he said, you will come up here and get this white chip. And every morning when you wake up, he said, you will pray to God to keep you sober. And every night before you go to bed, you will hit your knees and you will thank God for being sober. And I looked back on that a couple of years later, and I realized that guy, who was a Jewish guy, painter, and he died 2 years later from colon cancer, he changed my life, because he gave me permission to the two things I wanted to do most and couldn't do, which is, one is I wanted to stop drinking and I couldn't do it. And the second thing, he told me, you can talk to God. God's open to this. And I wasn't ready for that after all the things. The way I dissed God, I couldn't believe it. But I did it. And they told me what to do. They told me not to think, just do what they said to do. And I did that because I was desperate, because I didn't want to lose my life, my wife, and my kids. And so from there, I'm sitting in an AA meeting after about a year, and the topic comes up, so who is your higher power? Now I'm thinking, who's my higher power? And people are saying, well, you know, it's the people in this room, that's my higher power. And the other was saying, well, you know, it's my sponsor, that's my higher power. And another guy said, it's the blue book of AA, that's my higher power. And I'm thinking, come on. I'm thinking to myself, I've 12 years of religious training. You learn something, and that's not the higher power. So I said to myself, Who's the higher power that has taken away this desire for me to drink every day? Said it to myself. Well, I don't know, but there were people coming out of the woodwork after that, inviting me to things that I had never been invited to. One was I got invited to a prayer dinner where I heard a regional manager for MCI speak. They said, oh yeah, this regional manager, MCI, he's going to talk and we're just going to have dinner. So he's talking, and the next thing I know, he goes into this thing about Jesus Christ in his life. I was just I can't tell you what he said, but I remember that and saying, this doesn't fit. I mean, I was tracking with him through his career, and then that, where did that come from? And then I got invited to a prayer breakfast where Adolf Kors IV spoke. Then I got invited by another guy to the prayer breakfast, the high-tech prayer breakfast. It was the second annual high-tech prayer breakfast. And that's when there was a speaker there, didn't have an impact on me. But Bill Leonard, who is in the audience, my friend Bill here, had a big impact on my life and my walk with Christ. He said, he closed the breakfast and he gave the invitation for people to come and surrender their lives to Christ if now is the time to pray with him. Well, I left the breakfast and I was with an investment banker. And the guy says to me, were you with that breakfast? I said, yeah. He said, did you hear that Bill Leonard thing? I said, yeah. He said, wasn't that ridiculous? And I said to him, I said, I don't know, man. I said, do you know anybody that believes in anything more than he believes in that Jesus that he was talking about? And the guy said, no, I guess not. So that was my first witnessing event. All right. So we go from there, and I said, you know, I need to meet this Bill Leonard guy. So I go meet Bill. He comes over to my office. I said, I knew we need new office space. Can you find me office space? Yeah, I can find you the office space you need. I said, hey, I'm a startup. We need flexibility. You know, no, that's what I do. I said, great. So, you know, you seem to know these Christian technology business guys. You know, I said, I don't know any of those guys. They seem to be nice guys. I said, could you introduce me to them? Now, what he didn't know is when you go to an AA meeting, they say, look, you got friends? Forget about them. You got to drop all your friends, start with new friends. I'm 40 years old. I mean, how do I do that? So off I go, and Bill sends me to a place where I can go and to a Bible study that's in a restaurant. It's a business men's Bible study where somebody speaks about the Bible for a few minutes, mini sermon thing, and then there's round table discussion, 7 o'clock in the morning deal. So I walk in. I think it took me an hour to find a Bible in my house. I didn't know where it was Bible. And the thing was half waterlogged and dried out. So it was all one of those swollen things. So I took it and I'm like, okay, so now I'm like ready, right? I mean, if you're going to go to a gunfight, you bring a gun. You go to a Bible study, you bring a Bible. So that's what I did. I went through that. And as I was going through that, at some point I truly felt these men loved me, and it made and through that I realized that was the love of Christ that was washing over me, and I started to understand who God was and who Jesus was and why Jesus came. And as I was headed to Hilton Head to visit my family on I-16, probably over the speed limit, I was listening to Adolf Kors give his testimony again, and at the end he said, "If you haven't surrendered your life to Christ, why are you holding on so tight?" And I was like, he was sitting next to me. And I'm like, I really don't know. You know, this isn't working out really well for me, this holding on tight thing. He says, well, why don't you do it right now? And I'm like, okay. So I surrendered my life to Christ, and he became my personal Lord and my personal Savior right then. He took away my sins, this guilt that I had. By the time I got to Hilton Head, not only was I relieved I was off I-16, which if you've ever driven, you would be relieved too. But when I got to Hilton Head, I was like, wow, this like weight came off of me. What do I do with this? So I went to a church and sat in their little garden. The church was closed. And I just prayed, saying, thank you, God. I don't know what to pray. And then I quickly went home to see my wife and kids, and I told them nothing. Because I didn't know if she was going to throw me out of the house or not. I mean, that's all we needed to do, because she wasn't certainly a believer in this. So I said, well, let me just kind of go along with this. Well, I was at a Southeast Software Association meeting, and I run into Bill Leonard again. I said, Bill, you had a big impact on my life. We were leaving the meeting. We were walking out to the parking deck. I said, you had a big impact on my life, and you need to know this, that I have surrendered myself, my life, to Jesus Christ. He says, man, that's great. That's great. He says, you need to be a table host at the high-tech prayer breakfast. I said, hold on. Hold on. I said, that means I got to invite people who are non-Christians? I said, I have too many friends. They know me. This is not going to go well if I sort of come out and talk about this. And he says, no, you need to do it. Well, we get out in the parking lot, and he beat me to a pulp until I said, okay, I'll do it. Well, those first invites, that first table that I had, was by far the best table that I ever had, because everybody I knew wasn't a Christian. Everybody looked like me. So I got to the, I get to the breakfast, and I remember the breakfast starts. I put my head between my legs. I couldn't look at anybody, none of my friends, because I'm thinking, what are they thinking about this? Charlie Paparilli invited me to a prayer breakfast. And they're talking about Jesus from the stage, you know, and all. I'm like, oh, man, what are they going to do? At the end, they each came up to me, and they shook my hand, and they said, this is really great. You know, thanks for inviting me. One of them, or two of them, said, you know, I didn't know this about you at all, you know. Is this something new or what, you know? So they started conversations. Well, those conversations continued after that breakfast. So it really got me to go public with my faith very early in my faith. So Bill not only led me on a path to Christ, but he also had me out myself. I came out from under my desk, and they came out, and it was amazing, because what resulted from that is we'd go on golf trips, and we would get into heated conversations after golf while drinking, sitting there. I'm not drinking. I wasn't drinking. And they're asking me, you know, there'd be one or two guys that really want to get into a discussion about the Bible or Jesus Christ and why he came and how this. It was amazing. So it opened up all these discussions. And I had people that came to me in very difficult times in life that were my friends from back then on that table. And they would say, I don't know, I need to come to you, but will you pray for me? Because where are they going to go? Where are they going to go? There was no prayer for them to go. I had friends that actually came and to know the Lord, because they actually started attending Bible studies with me. So I'd say, if I start a Bible study from scratch, you know, we go from Genesis on through to the end, would you come to that every week for a year? I had three friends say, sure, I'll do that. That's the interest that's out there, because they don't know where to go. The last part of that and where it led was, I actually at Indian Hills gave a eulogy for one of those guys that came to that table. And in that eulogy, I was the only one that spoke. It had to be, he wanted a party. He didn't want a church. So he had all his friends there, all his drinking buddies and everything else. And I gave the eulogy, and I talked about my discussions with Jeffrey about Jesus and how that hit, because now's the time to talk about that. And I said, I think, and I pray and I hope that just before he died that he came to know the Lord. And he had his two kids here from England, you know, that they are pure agnostics, if anything, you know. So it was crazy, you know. So you look at those, that impact, and what happened? I basically invited people to a prayer breakfast. So I came out, everybody knew I was a Christian. So I look back and I say, man, God, after becoming public with my faith, God used me in some like miraculous ways. I don't have a plan. He just used me because I was usable. I was there. And I think what I've come to and what I want to share with you today, that there's really, like, what I found in looking back, there's three solid reasons for going public with your faith. Three solid reasons. And the first one is people need to know. You're a disciple of Jesus Christ. People need to know. This is who you stand for. It's a pretty simple thing. You surrendered your life to Christ. Stand up and go, yep, that's who I follow. That's what I do. You want to know what he says? Read the four Gospels. Tell you everything about them, okay? Just do that. That's who I follow. That's what I'm about. And what I found in that is that people actually trusted me more than other people. because at least people know what I stood for, right? Which was pretty cool. Which got me to the second thing, which is people started holding me to this higher standard. Oh, you're that Christian guy. So what would a Christian do in this investment? When you acted that way in that meeting, that wasn't very Christian. You know, I'm like, oh man, when did I sign up for this? You know, but you get held to a higher standard just automatically. And the fact of the matter is people expect more from us because Jesus told us, you are citizens of heaven now. We are citizens of heaven. We're no longer citizens of the world, although we are in the world. So we stand apart, and people, in fact, see that and expect that, which is pretty cool. And then the last reason is it opens up, as I had described earlier, all kinds of opportunities. And these opportunities are to counsel people, to pray with people, and to witness with people. Well, how did all that happen? Well, I made it clear that I'm a Christian. I happen to make it clear because Bill Leonard pinned me to the parking deck stanchion and said, you need to be a table host and invite people to it. So when I look at people need to know, Christ said to us, you are a light. You are the light of the world. You are a city on a hill. So I was concerned when I went public because I was afraid that I would lose all my friends and that I would be stuck with only these Christian people, as a friend of mine calls them, wide-eyed Christians. You know that? I said, wide-eyed Christian. And I don't know those people. And they don't know me. And I'm not like, I don't come from that background. And what happened is I realized that I attracted some, and some of them distanced themselves from me. In fact, there was this meeting that I had, a lunchtime meeting, when I had gotten started in this angel investing. Now, in angel investing, I'm looking for investment opportunities of very early stage startups. And it was in the services business, the IT services business. And so I talked to this venture capitalist, and I told him what we did, and I had a relationship with him. His name was Chuck Johnson. And I said to Chuck, I said, what do people think of me? This is probably about 2 years into it. Chuck said, you know, a lot of people, they don't know what to make of you. They're not quite sure. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, you know, you do all this Jesus stuff, you know, all this religion thing. You know, we don't know what that is. And so, you know, quite honestly, you know, some people don't know what to do with you and stay away from you. Some people, you know, they don't want to be witnessed to, you know, they're afraid that that's what's going to happen. And some people don't care. I remember leaving that meeting saying, wow. So should I shut up about this? Because I want opportunities to come my way. I don't want anybody to go away. And then I said, well, you know, this is one of those situations. Am I going to trust Jesus Christ as my Lord and my Savior? Or am I going to come down and say, no, it's better if I get quiet. You know, my light will shine through, as you said. Okay. And I said, no, I'm going to do it. This is who I am. This is what we did. And besides, I got Bill Leonard behind me saying, no, this is what you need to do. So off we went. Then, but another example here on people need to know is I was down at the Advanced Technology Development Center. And this is just about 3 years ago. I had gotten started there as a volunteer, and they called me the angel in residence. I thought that was really cool. So here's this government organization calling me the angel in residence. If they would have only known me 25 years ago, that would have been good. But anyway, the guy that was running at the time was an agnostic. And he said to me, you know, I want you to start this angel lounge. An angel lounge is something that I had started in 2008. And it was a community organization to have angels who, with experience, bringing in people that don't have experience who are interested in early stage investing. So that it would be a learning environment and a networking area. I did it from 2008 to 2014 and then kind of 2013 and sort of stopped it because we were getting in some of these community organizations, you wind up like in Bible studies with the very same people every month. And he came to me and he said, you need to start this thing up again. He says, it's a good time right now. And I said, really? I said, you know that I'm going to start it up based on my values and the principles. He says, I don't care. He says, you know, we trust you. You know, you're good at this. You got a good reputation in town. Started it and it took off. And that guy wrote a book. Everything that you know about, everything you should know about startups and isn't true, I think is the name. And everything you should know about startups isn't true. Well, I got the book. I went to the book signing. And about a year later, I get a call from a guy named Sims out of the blue, who is a Georgia Tech sophomore in mechanical engineering. And he says to me, you don't know me. He says, but I'm a Christian and I'm a mechanical engineer trying to get out of Georgia Tech here. And he says, I read about you in KP's book. I said, what? He goes, yeah, you're in his book. He talks about you and your faith and the way you invest. I went, how about that? So now they've got this agnostic guy, doesn't want to have anything to do with Jesus or any gods, okay? And he's talking about me reverently, okay, about my faith. Like, oh, that's a pretty cool deal. Well, Sims, I said, hey, listen, why don't you come down to this Bible study we had at Georgia Tech? That's always my test. He shows up. Young guy, I said, look, you're going to be one of the leaders for Christ in the next generation. I said, I took him down to the ATDC and introduced him to some key leaders. He wound up getting an internship, and he's still at that Bible study. So he's being discipled in all these different ways and the impact that he's going to have. That's part of what I'm talking about, the miracles that God can do through you. And I really didn't do anything except what God had asked me to do every day. Then the second reason is people hold us to a higher standard. That's always something I hear from people. You know, once they hear that, then I'm going to have to be Jesus himself. Okay? And so I don't want to talk about it. You know, but it does create an entire community of accountability of believers and non-believers. And you know who's toughest on you? Believers. The legalism comes straight in, all right? The non-believers, they have more grace than the believers in a lot of cases, all right? But I invest in startup companies. So I'm always talking, it's all about people and money. There isn't a quicker way to start a fire or a fight than people and money. You put them together, it's ugly. Now, people look to me for the integrity in a deal and for the honesty in the deal. When the deal's going good, everybody's perfect. When the deal goes bad, it's like dogs fighting over raw meat. It's just awful how bad it can get. So in these deals, I always make sure, are we bringing in the right kind of partners so that in the bad times, you know, we're there. Am I investing in the right kind of entrepreneur? Does he have a foundation in Jesus Christ? So that when you rub it all down, you can kind of get to something. You could say, this is what we believe and this is what we should do. So at some point, you got to trust God in startups. It's really hard. Nothing goes well. Just takes time. An example there is we had this deal. I've been in something for 10 years, and we had this guy who came in. He had more money than the rest of us, and so he actually did a round of funding, which caused a tremendous amount of dilution to the people that have been, me included, that people have been around for 10 years. And we had a chance to put money in, but we all stood back. And we said, Gary, you know, we're glad that you're doing this. You're saving our bacon. At least we have something. Well, what happened is the company started to go well after that. Part of the original deal was, his deal, was that if you don't participate in this round, you don't participate in the next round. Well, things started going well, started to get better. It looks like it's going to work. So now I said, you know, Gary, you don't have to do this. I said, but I think it would be a nice thing to offer those people who passed on the deal, who have been in this deal for a long time, asked for this next round, which is a smaller round, 2 years later, I said, if you'd let them in and let them participate, even though contractually they're not allowed. He said, sure, I'll do that. So this is the partner that we chose, and that's who we work with. And it cost him at least 100 hours, you know, to get all the documents rewritten and right and modified in order to do that. But he did it. He never said, now that I got into it, it's a bad idea. No, he did it. And that's the kind of partnerships that we're talking about. And that's the kind of people that we're around. You know, another thing is I walked into ATDC yesterday. And I ran into the guy that's the lead entrepreneur in residence and also the fellow I was going to meet with, who is a secular Jew. His name is Glenn. And we just started talking a bit before Glenn and I were going to have our meeting. And he said, so how's it going? I said, well, it's going pretty good, but I want to tell you two guys. I said, on Friday, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. So this head EIR, an entrepreneur in residence, he's a Catholic, and he said to me, because we've had a lot of discussions, he said to me, you know, Ellen and I are going to pray for you. That's Frank. Ellen and I are going to pray for you. He said, we don't pray for a lot of people. We're going to pray for you. And you could just see the love and compassion in his eyes and the relationship that we have. And then Glenn, I looked at Glenn, and Glenn goes, man, that sucks. And so we had our meeting, and here I am with Glenn, and we're going doing our thing. What we were doing was some planning for this Angel Lounge thing for 2019. And I left, and we talked about this prostate cancer thing for a little bit, you know, and he was compassionate about it. He did help me out. I don't want to be unfair to Glenn. He's given me some names of people that might be able to help me. But I walked out of that meeting and I said, you know, I said, here it is again. I said, I was in that meeting and I'm still struggling. One of the things I struggled with all my life is my language. Some of it is just pretty harsh, okay? Talking expletives kind of stuff. And I found myself, I left there and I said, why did you do that? Why did you say those words? They weren't even necessary to say. Okay, and the thing that hit me was, what kind of witness was that? Because he holds me in that regard, you know, as being this Christian. So I represent Christ and all of us. So that was a sort of a disappointment for me, and something went on. But that's the accountability. He didn't say a word, but I know he knows, and he was thinking about it. And then the last one is, last reason, is it opens up all kinds of opportunities once you go public with your faith. And when you have to think about this, when you look around your workplace and when you look around your neighborhood, those people that don't go to church, which is in fact the majority of the people that we're usually surrounded by, is where do they go when they are curious about God? They don't want to go to church. Where do they go if they're curious about God? The best place they want to go is they want to go to you and me. Where do these people go if they're suffering some of life's problems? They're having problems in their marriage, or they're having problems, you know, their wife is diagnosed with cancer, or one of the kids got hurt, or where do they go? Where do they go? Where's their infrastructure? They're of the world, you know? And we know this, is the world makes total sense until something like that happens, and then it makes no sense. That's why we go public. That's one of the big reasons. This lady came to me. She was a Chinese lady, PhD, from Georgia Tech. She came to pitch her new product to me, her new idea. And her name was Hen Yen. And she came to me and she says, oh, yeah, I got my PhD from University of Miami, which was my school. I didn't get a PhD. Smart girl. She gets her PhD in atmospheric science. So she studies how granules of sand are carried across the ocean in these hurricanes and impact our climate. I'm like, that is a big idea, right? Taking Sahara and bringing it here. And that's what. Anyway, so I'm like, oh, this idea is going to be fascinating. And so I said, pitch it to me. So she turns on the computer, and what comes up as the first image is an engorged breast. I said, yeah, help me out here. So she says, oh, yeah. She said, I just had a baby, and I had these engorged breasts, and I came up with a solution because it was so painful, you know. So she had a solution for that. So she was pitching me on this. And I said, I said, so what I usually do, for those that know me, I usually go and I ask people about their lives. And I said, so where did you grow up? And, you know, I said, where did you meet your husband? She said, oh, that's an interesting story. She said, when I was 14 years old, I got this dream. And this dream was very clear of I was in school and I met this man and we went on this hike and we were walking up this mountain and all this. And I just knew that that was going to be my husband. And she said, I said, that was at 14? You met him at 14? She goes, no, that was the dream. She says, when I was 18, that dream became a reality. I said, wow, so you're somebody who really thinks about visions and spirituality. She said, yeah. And that got us into a whole conversation about the Holy Spirit, okay, of God and how he works in our lives as Christians. And I have when I give a pitch to entrepreneurs, I always say, where do you think ideas come from? You think it's your ideas. There's no scientific proof of ideas. So that idea came from God. And nobody can dispel that. That's a fact. It came from God. Made you, gave you the idea, changed your entire life because that's what you're doing. And so she really connected with that. I said, would you be interested in going to a Bible study we have here? She says, I've never been to anything like that. You know, I don't know. So she came. And I remember in the first Bible study, she got, I love it. I always try to get people to read the Bible out loud that haven't read the Bible before. I mean, I don't know what it is, but it just gives me goosebumps when I see somebody being exposed to the word for the first time. Well, here she is. What does she get to read? She gets to read the consequences that God is spelling out for Eve after she ate the fruit and gave the fruit to Adam. You could see she was getting a little annoyed at the fact that God was saying this to Eve. You know, these consequences, you know, this is not fair. That's, in fact, that's what she said. It's not fair. It wasn't shortly after that that she came. She kept coming and over about a year, and she came to surrender her life to Christ. Her son came to Christ. And now her husband, who is in his mid-30s and a tenured professor at Georgia Tech and an expert in this atmospheric sciences, he's hearing from her all the time about Jesus and how he needs to come to church with him, her, and his son, which I don't know. I mean, how could you ever predict something like that, right? Then I was at the ATDC. It's my last story. It's not quite my last story, but it's close to my last. I get called into this entrepreneur in residence office, and he's a Christian guy. You know, he told me he was a Christian guy. And I go in and he goes, you know, I got to talk to you. I said, what is it? He goes, you know, I see you, you know, you wear your like faith stuff on your sleeve. He says, you know, I don't buy that. You know, I just don't feel comfortable with that. It's just not who I am. And he says, but I see that maybe I should start considering it, but I don't even know where to start or what to do. And I don't have canned answers for these things. I remember when guys pose questions like that to me, I'm always thinking, you know, Lord, you need to come up with something here. It better be good, you know, because I didn't write a book on this subject, okay? You did. All right. So I said to him, do you have any kind of issues speaking about your wife? He said, no. I said, no. And I saw that because you told me all about her and how great she is. And you told me all about your kids and how smart they are and gifted they are athletically and all this. I said, you have a really good relationship with them. And I said, the relationship with Jesus Christ is the same thing. It's sort of like if you have a half full glass of Jesus in a relationship, you know, it's not really going to come out. And if it comes out, it's artificial. It's like, oh, yeah, you should know about Jesus. You know, it's good for you. You know what? Come to church with me. It's awkward. But when that relationship is a glass that's overflowing, it's like the same relationships you have with your wife and with your kids. It just comes out. It's just part of who you are. It's what you talk about. It's not artificial. It's things like, oh, yeah, when I came to that last Bible study, I just came out of this, you know, at lunch. It was amazing. I got convicted on this thing about blah, 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 blah. I'm just talking. I'm not moving it anywhere. I'm letting God do what he wants to do. I said, so is your relationship with Jesus Christ that way? couldn't answer that, or didn't want to answer it. But that's what that's all about. Which brings me to prayer. So those are the three big reasons, okay? Because people need to know. And you're going to be held, the second reason is it's good to be held to a standard of higher accountability because we're not of the world anymore. We're in the world. And the last one is you just don't know what opportunities Jesus is going to open for you because you're open to him. But then prayer. People will come to me and they'll ask for prayer. And it happens more often than you think. But there's a lot of people who come don't know that they need prayer. I'll have people that are just pitching a company to me, and I see how difficult this process has been to them trying to get this thing out of the ground. And I'll ask the Holy Spirit, do you want me to pray? And if the Holy Spirit says pray, I don't care what religion they are, not religion or anything else, because I don't know at that point. I say, look, I said, you know, I just feel the urge to pray for you. Is that okay with you? I have never had anybody say, nah, that's a crappy idea. We're not going to do that. Okay, no. Pray for me. Good. You know, and when I pray, they go, you know, I've never had an experience like that. That's pretty amazing. You know, and I remember Bill gave a presentation one time on prayer to an ambassador group that we had. And he said, you know, Satan does not care if you read the Bible. But Satan cares a lot if you pray. That has stuck with me. Bill, I think you must have done that over 10 years ago when you talked about prayer at that time. So, think about prayer. When you look at the people that are around you in your neighborhoods, look at the people that are at work, who is praying for those people? Who's praying for them? If it's not you and me, there's nobody praying for those people. Think about that. They have no intercessors. They have no coverage with God. Simply, we could be that. They don't even know that you're praying for them in a lot of cases, but they'll know. It's just, I don't know. These people come to me, and they come to me a lot of times not knowing what they need, and the answer really is just prayer. You don't have to give them money. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to give them the right answer. You just say, look, I'm just going to pray for you because that's what I do. At business meals, I have practiced, and it was uncomfortable at first, but I am practicing praying over the meal just to thank God for all his blessings. And I usually take that opportunity to bless the person that's in front of me because I've already gotten some background on them. And early on, I remember there was a guy that's a really, really good friend of mine. You know, and most people, I'll tell you, you tell me, hey, can I pray a blessing over the meal? And they go, yeah, sure, no problem. Some of them will join in and some of them just kind of sit there till you're done and you kind of move on. But but I've never had anybody say no. The most negative reaction I got was from a really good friend, a neighbor who we grew up with our kids 20 years together, secular Jew. The most negative reaction, Scott, do you mind if I pray for the meal? Knock yourself out, he said. So I prayed. The result of that is he knew right then and there I was a Christian. He didn't come to the prayer breakfast, but he knew right then and there I was a Christian. So if it was worth anything, now we know where that all leads, it's worth that. Later, we had a little get-together at our house that I did with the church. God had given me this vision for this, from all of these Bible studies that I did, of something that I call Blitz Through the Bible. I take a group of people, sometime a room of 200, and I will take them through the Bible. They are reading the Bible out loud, and I'll take them from beginning to end in 2.5 hours. So what I say, if you ever want to know the Bible, ever want to know, you got 2.5 hours, you will understand how it's organized, where it came from, and what the central theme and message is all in 2.5 hours. You interested? I haven't met anybody that says, no, I'm not interested. So we did that. So we tried to do it at our home one time, and we invited Scott and his wife, Jane, and they came. Scott blew it off at the end. He didn't want to go to a Bible study at that. But Jane went into Bible study for 4 years with Kathy, my wife, and with these other women that were in that neighborhood. Now, they've since moved out of town, but I can say this. His son, Brian, he's friends with my son David. They're 30 years old now. And David is a born-again Christian, and he's getting questions from Brian about the Bible and Jesus Christ and what that means, because he wasn't raised with that. But he's in the South, and he's getting these messages. He doesn't know what to do with it. Who does he go to? His best friend, who he knows is a Christian. Also, Scott's two daughters happen to marry Christians. So this guy's surrounded by this. Now, all I can say to all that is this is God. This is God. Jesus told us, nothing is impossible with God. And when I look at these situations and these interactions and how they work out, I feel that all the time. So I tell you, I encourage you, I challenge you, take the wrap off of your faith. Get out from under the desk and claim clearly that you are a Christian, that you are a disciple of Jesus Christ. He is your King and He is your Savior, and you have a personal relationship with Him. Then just watch the miracles that God does in your life and in other people's life through you. You will be blown away. Thank you.